You know the head of IT too, Brian.
I am not, but
you're collecting all the merit badges.
That's the one where the
Infinity Gauntlet will be complete.
The owls.
The owl's not working.
I think it's coming alive. It'll move here in a second.
I like your shirt.
Thank you.
It's a good shirt. It's waking up.
Who's driving right now?
I am.
You are? Okay. Do you click on the video? Does it not turn on at all?
Well,
there we go. It's doing something.
It's a little scary.
There you go. It should be that Matrix one, that Fox in the Matrix.
Test.
Test.
All right. And then for microphone, actually, do you want to click on where it's audio? So I think you grabbed the wrong one. Do that like little carrot menu. Microphone should be
the system.
Yeah, unless you want to use, because you want to use the overheads, right? You don't want to use the owl. Yeah, you should be good then.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, now that we got that figured out, we will call to order the City Council work session for Tuesday, September 23rd, 2025. Topics of discussion number one, review of quotes for a new curbside recycling contract beginning in 2026.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. As you ordered a call back in March, we talked about the fact that our recycling contract with Ace Solid Waste is set to expire at the end of this year. Direction was to go out and connect with three haulers, one of which being our current hauler, seeking quotes for a new four-year term so that it would end at the end of 2029. Staff had reached out to Ace, Republic Services, and a third hauler. We'll get to why I'm not naming them at the moment, but verified that each of them would be interested in providing a quote for recycling service for the city of Ramsey. Then put together a request for quotes, and the reason we went that route instead of just saying, hey, give us a price for what it would be for recycling service is a lot of different factors can affect the pricing. It's really challenging just to say, hey, what's Andover charging or what's Elk River charging, because land area, property sizes, the mix of single family versus townhomes versus apartment complexes, they all come into play there. So we put together a request for quotes, included a schedule in there giving deadlines for when they needed to let us know that they intend to submit a quote, and then deadline for submitting the actual quote. On the last day for haulers to provide their intent to submit a quote, we received it from the third hauler with a follow-up email saying confirmed, got it. Another individual of that company reached out and said, hey, that individual didn't have the authority to submit a quote, so we'd like to rescind that offer. I had some dialogue with them, and they ultimately ended up saying, we're going to pass this time, keep us in mind for future ones. So based on the schedule we had laid out in the RFQ, there wasn't sufficient time to locate or connect with a third hauler to seek a quote. So that's why we only have two quotes for consideration at this time. I have handed those out here. I didn't attach them to the case because it's considered non-public data. So handing them out for this discussion, and then when we conclude this discussion, I'll have to collect those sheets back from you for safekeeping, I guess. So again, quotes from Ace Solid Waste and Republic Services, both of which are very reputable outfits, both of which very capable of providing recycling service to the community. I think you can see, based on the pricing that they, on the pricing worksheets that they both submitted, Ace Solid Waste has the best pricing for our residents. We did specifically ask for the standard every other week curbside collection rate. We did ask for two ad alternates. So what would it look like if some residents wanted a weekly recycling service? And also, what would it look like if residents were interested in having curbside collection of organics? So that's what the second two boxes are on there. I would say the primary thing to be focused on really would be that top box, which shows what each hauler was proposing their rates to be over the life of the four-year contract. If you look at it, obviously both of them increase year over year. Ace Solid Waste proposal is a 3% increase year over year, whereas Republic Services is a 5% increase year over year for the life of the contract. So looking at that, staff is recommending to begin negotiations with Ace Solid Waste. They are a current hauler. They are a local business. They've provided good quality service for several decades at this point now for the community. So I guess with that, I will turn it over to any questions.
Eric. Chris, what's the organics? Is that just the future organics that are coming down the pipeline, or is that just grass clippings and such like that?
No, it's not the yard waste. So your yard waste isn't envisioned to be part of our curbside recycling contract. That service is offered by garbage haulers through that side of things. So the organics would be your food waste, pizza boxes, you know, have grease and stuff that you can't put in the recycling, those types of items.
My parents have that set up in Maple Grove right now. It's kind of a little bit of a nightmare right now with the organics.
Okay. Chris?
How do these prices compare to what we've been paying for our last contract?
Sure. So currently, the rate is $3.98 per household per month. So as you can see from there, ACE is proposing to hold steady for the first year of the new contract, or of a new contract, should they be awarded it. And then from there, you know, in total, I think it increases 39 cents from day one to the last year of the contract.
Any other questions? Kirsten?
Is that increase typical of what we saw in the last contract?
Last contract, actually, they originally had proposed a year-over-year increase. I apologize. I don't remember what that increase looked like. But ultimately, they ended up, after further discussion, they did end up going with a flat fee. So if ACE were awarded the contract based on the quote that they provided, they would have held steady or flat rate for six consecutive years. I don't think it's any surprise that the proposals show an increase in the cost. We all experience it every day now with inflation going on. Cost of living has gone up, so the cost of doing business also has gone up.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Everybody is good with moving forward with ACE. All right. I think you're good to continue negotiating curbside contract with ACE.
Thank you.
Speaking of recycling, collect these.
If you want, I'll give it to you, I guess.
Start the recycling process.
Thank you.
What kind of thing?
Yeah. All right, moving on to the next topic, topic two, variance appeals.
All right. Thank you, Mayor, Council members. Later on tonight's regular agenda as well as the next council meeting, we have two variance appeals. So this isn't going to talk about either of those cases, just really what is a variance, what is the appeal process, and what your role in that is. That way then the applicants who are doing their appealing, they can state their case in the council chambers. So what is a variance? You know, when I talk to your average resident, very simplistically, it's permission for a deviation from city code for a good reason. And what are the things that qualify for variances? It's basically anything that's got some sort of a dimensional standard. So for building structures, site improvements, as well as signs, although that's in a different chapter, front setback, side setback, rear setback, height, separation, impervious coverage, anything that's got some sort of measurement or distance. And then also with lots, you can have a lot that has a width, area, depth, or frontage variance. Use variances are illegal under state law. Because that, in a sense, defeats the purpose of zoning. Within a zoning district, you have a set of uses. You can't grant a variance to allow for something that's not otherwise allowed in that district. So City Code Section 106-220, this is the entire section on variances, and a good chunk of this comes from state statutes, pretty much verbatim. This part that I have highlighted in yellow, and zooming in on that, these are those good reasons for deviating from city code. Zoning tries to treat all properties within a zoning district the same, though properties, by their very nature, are unique. Sure, properties next door to each other are going to have a lot of similarities, but trying to, in a city like Ramsey, having properties on the river are going to have certain characteristics that properties in the middle of town don't have, with the slopes and the water and shoreline and all that. So trying to treat everything the same doesn't always work. So they realized this early on, many, many decades ago. So with zoning comes some sort of relief when something just doesn't work quite right. So the state legislature, through some court cases and whatnot, passed this several years ago, that those good reasons are as a result of a practical difficulty, that you can't meet the code. So here are what those are. One of them, though, is not from state statutes, but I'll get into that. So the property owner proposes to use the property in a reasonable manner, not permitted by the zoning code. I highlighted manner here because some people see the word use and think that they can get, I want to use the property for this, so I should be able to get a variance for it. Like, no, you can't. It's not what you're using it for, it's how you're using it for. The plight of the landowner is due to circumstances unique to the property, not created by the landowner. So you didn't create the hardship, you didn't paint yourself into a corner, but what are the natural features of the property that you did not create that are there? So along the river, steep slopes, some shoreland, maybe some wetlands. You have a 200-year-old oak tree that's just beautiful and want to move something so you don't damage it. Number three, the variance, if granted, will not alter the essential character of the locality. It shouldn't stick out like a sore thumb. This isn't so weird or so different from what's going on around it. Is it reasonable? Number four, economic considerations alone do not constitute practical difficulties. So just because it's cheaper and easier to do it this way doesn't make it right. It can have, in conjunction with something else, because it would work, but it on itself you can't use. Practical difficulties include but not limited to inadequate access to direct sunlight for solar energy systems. Minnesota Constitution says you have the right to the sun, so if you're in a shady spot, you need to go a little taller, get a little over to get some sunlight. That's justification. I'll jump to number seven. Likewise, for earth shelter construction, that comes from state statute. So if you want to burrow into the ground to build a house, you can do that. Number six, which I'm not sure why it went in as number six, not the other way around, but that was the one that was added on a few years back as a request from Anoka County Highway Department with all the takings that were involved with Highway 10 reconstruction. So if the county needed to acquire a strip of land that sets your building out of conformance with the minimum setback, that should be enough for a variance. And a lot of cities have that rule. So those are the good reasons. Otherwise, if something doesn't fall into one of these good reasons, then why do we have that rule in the first place? Do we change the code to allow for what they want it to do legally? Another thing to note, this sometimes can be a tipping factor, and does it seem reasonable? You can impose a condition of the variance. And quite often this is like, add some landscaping to kind of soften it up, break it up, maybe to hide a few things, just make it blend in a little better. Maybe if it's someone's building a structure a little closer to the street, do you decorate that, put in some windows, brick trim, something like that to make it look less like a big wall. And then the Planning Commission is in Ramsey, the final decision-making authority. Out of state statutes, there is the Board of Appeals, as it's called. And that is the group that has these final says on variances. Some cities, it's the Planning Commission. Some cities, it's the City Council. Some cities, it's another commission altogether that has just reviews variances. In Ramsey, though, we have this second part of it where anyone can appeal the Planning Commission's decision to the City Council. So essentially they're transferring that hat of the Board of Appeals from the Planning Commission to the Council for a second round. In other cities where the Council is the final decision making, or the only one who actually makes a decision, then anyone who doesn't like that decision has to appeal it through the court system. So this allows for residents, businesses, neighbors, a way to say, hey, let's take a second look before going on to the more expensive route. So you're going to serve as that appeal authority once tonight and once in 2 weeks. So your review standards for the variances are those practical difficulties. The Planning Commission reviewed both of the variances that are being appealed, and they approved one and denied the other. And basically what they're looking at is, in a quasi-judicial manner, does this request address the practical difficulties for variances? Simply, yes or no. In one case, they felt that it did address it and approved it, and the other, that it did not and denied it. And both of those are being challenged for you. So I put on here the graphic. This is the pyramid of discretion, something that planners are very familiar with and is used in Planning Commission, City Council training, kind of where you have the most say in things. So up there at the top, you have building permits. You don't review building permits as a council, but it's something that we just do at the staff level because we review it. Does it meet code? Yes, no. Get your building permit, move on. Plan review, kind of very similar. Down at the bottom of the pyramid, the comprehensive plan. You actually have a lot of say in that. Where do you put certain land uses? What are the policies? What are the visions for the community? And from time to time, people may request to change that comp plan to allow for something else. And there you can say, we don't like it. Deny. And you don't really actually have to have much of a good reason. Above that, zoning and subdivision. You do have a more say in those types of things. As long as they're in conformance with the comprehensive plan, your decision's there. The stuff in the middle, you do have some discretion, but not a lot. So you do see a lot of conditional use permits, and you know that once you meet all the conditions, you pretty much have to approve a CUP. Variances are on top of that and have even less discretion. So what you're reviewing is, does it meet the criteria, yes or no, in a reasonable manner. So, I don't know if city attorney has anything to add, but that is my presentation on variances and the appeals, what to use when reviewing it.
Fritz, anything to add?
Well, I don't know where you want to go with it. This is kind of your decision to give the Planning Commission final authority on some of these issues come to roost. Before, you had a good deal of discretion when the hearing was held. The Planning Commission held the hearing, but ultimately you made the decision. And other things could factor into that. Much to the chagrin of the Planning Commission, very often, you know, they would say here and all kinds of places, we're the Planning Commission, we have to go through the hearing, we make a recommendation, you ignore us, why are we here? That usually is the argument that gets them the job of then finally making the final decision. Problem is, when you make the final decision, you lose that kind of discretion that you had in making the decision before. When you're reviewing under this process, what you're doing is you're actually acting as an appeals court, in a way, quasi-judicial court, and you have to decide, not whether you agree with the decision or not, not whether you like the decision or not, but whether it was mistaken in its interpretation of the code.
Or not.
In other words, it's a different review. You lose a certain amount in this setup over what you had in terms of your discretion from before. It is what it is. I mean, and that's what it is. So when you're looking at these appeals now, you need to understand that this is no longer the way it used to be, where, God, I don't like that. I think that they were nuts. I don't agree with that. They ever would be, of course. But, you know, I don't agree with their decision at all. I think they got it wrong. And you change your mind, much to their chagrin. You were totally entitled to do that for whatever reason. You don't have it anymore. And the danger here is that you may do that and say, well, we're not going to agree with you. And that fact alone would be a basis for challenging it in court. Not whether the underlying decision was right, not whether the decision of the Planning Commission was right or not, but whether your way of reviewing it was right or not. So that's the one area of caution that I would raise for you at this setup.
Without going into any details of upcoming cases, asking broad general questions, who has a question on this? Chris and then Shannon.
Well, I guess a couple things. First, when I read through, I'm reading letter C. You know, words and legal are real important, but variances may be granted. So it's not a shall, but it's a may be granted. So I guess that goes back to the Planning Commission right now, right, that they don't have to give the variance, but they could. The fact that it says may, not shall. And I guess I'm asking you, Todd, but Fritz, to clarify.
It is discretionary. It is what it says.
Okay.
But
so
again, what I want to emphasize here, though, is that that's not your call.
Right.
If they grant the variance, that's their call. And you have to decide whether or not they were mistaken in the way in which they did it.
Right. And that's under our current system.
Right.
And I guess I'll just further, I would suggest that we maybe we switch up a little bit, and my thinking is we change the process a bit, that planning is no longer the final authority, but we would have like kind of the presumption that it goes on our consent agenda if it seems like a slam dunk and no one's contesting it and making it, you know, easily goes through city council. If there's anybody if it's a 4-3 vote on planning, or if someone's contesting it, then obviously it comes to our agenda, our regular agenda, and any of us could always pull it from consent also. So I think that kind of is a little bit of a hybrid. It pulls the final authority to council, but still, I'm going to say, leaves the predominance of it with planning, but the final say goes through council then.
Okay. Shannon and Dan.
What's our history? Is this been always how Ramsey has operated with planning being the final authority, or is this something that we've flopped in the history of Ramsey?
Mayor, council members, this is about 5-6 years old, this system. Mr. Anderson was here when that change happens. So.
Mr. Mayor, council members, in my 20-plus years here, Planning Commission has always been the authority on variances. They used to recess the Planning Commission meeting and convene as the Board of Adjustment to address variances, and then would conclude as the Board of Adjustment and reconvene as a Planning Commission. So at one point, we revised or amended city code to just say the Planning Commission shall act on variances. That eliminated that procedural stuff of having to recess as the Planning Commission, start a new meeting as the Board of Adjustment, conclude that, and then go back to serving as a Planning Commission. But it has been that board in 20-plus years that I've been here that acts on variances.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ryan. So I guess in my thought, I'm thinking about this more too, actually one resident contacted me as well about it. Just the idea of an unelected board kind of making those decisions. I mean, I respect the board and it plays an important role, but I kind of like the way that Riley was talking about it, where, you know, they can do the input, they can get ideas, they can vote, and, you know, maybe could be in our consent, but I think the end decision really should go with the elected officials or the elected body.
More questions?
I agree.
I'm curious what you were talking, or you would mention something while he was talking. Was that? Oh, okay.
No,
I just wanted. I'm like, was that? Did I miss? Like, is there a part of the history that I was supposed to hear over on this side?
I thought it was more recent than that, though. It seems to me that the actual change happened while I was here.
I mean, I was on play for 5 years.
So yeah, and then Kirsten, and then I'm going to say something.
But there was one other point here that I wanted to make, if I may, Mr. Mayor, since I'm
Yep. Anyways,
is one of the things that was said here in terms of what you can consider when you're considering this is obviously, you know, the recommendation of the Planning Commission, not the recommendation, the decision of the Planning Commission. But the case also says, and any supplemental information. That's actually not allowed. You're stuck with the record you got from the Planning Commission. I don't want to make it sound too restrictive, because usually it's a pretty big file, and I get that. But the reason I say that is that there's an enormous temptation sometimes to, in effect, reopen the public hearing. You've got a lot of people in a room that are angry about something. The other supplemental information is not included in whatever your decision is going to be.
Mayor, council members, what I meant by that is when both of the parties who did the requesting for the appeal, I had them put together a letter of why they felt that the decision was wrong if they miss a certain point or whatever. So that's surely what it supplemented. It wasn't more fact finding and digging and analysis and site visits or anything like that. It was just
walk down on this.
Dan and then Kirsten and then I'll go.
And Riley will probably correct me on some of the history too, but I think there's a season where we're trying to get, you know, we moved things like the dog licenses to the administration. We moved a lot of things to try to get less stuff coming to us, you know, and I think this is one of those things at the time of like, well, this is one less thing that could come to us, because sometimes we have meetings till 10 or 11 and we're just like, how can we simplify the processes? And we got rid of a lot of things too within the process, but as I rethink and think about this, but so I guess that's a little bit of history. I think it was, I don't know, 5-6 years ago or something, when we, and maybe before that it was purely at planning, but I think we gave them that full rights, you know, within my time here. But as I think about it, and as I've heard feedback too, I think since we're the elected body, we should be the final person either they're happy with or angry with, or, I mean, it's, I think we need to be responsible for that, so.
Kirsten?
I was just going to ask, like, what other cities around us are doing, what I was going to ask you what the history is of the change as to why we went to this new format, and kind of if we were to move to a new format, what we'd be sacrificing, and what, you know, positives there would be though also.
Well, Mayor, council members, what I prepared tonight was really just parameters for the appeals, but this discussion just seemed to be moving into just changing the whole process altogether. And if you want, we can do some research and bring forward a code amendment. It's got to go through a public hearing at the Planning Commission. So since it is change of Chapter 106. But we can certainly do research of what other communities do and who wears the hat at that time.
Stephanie?
Yeah, Mayor and Council members, I just wanted to clarify what Chris had said earlier, is that this is a process that's been in place for at least the 20 years that he's been here, so there hasn't been any changes with the variances. It's always been part of the Planning Commission. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, I have a question. I understand, Fritz, what you're saying about we can't overrule them just because we want to. Our avenue to grant an appeal is based on if the information is not factual, is that what you said?
It's an error. In other words, they made a mistake.
So here's my question. We look at, see that the variance may be granted when the applicant for the variance establishes that there are practical difficulties. These are all subjective statements. The property owner possesses to use the property in a reasonable manner. The plight of the landowner is due to circumstances unique. A variance is granted or will not alter the essential character of the locality. So if the Planning Commission says, we believe that this will alter the essential character of the locality, and we believe that is an error because we look at it and we say, we actually don't think it is, then does that give us the right to say your finding is an error and we are accepting the appeal?
You can if you base it on the record. In other words, if you're looking at that record and you've got the testimony and everything else, you're looking at the record and you're looking at that and you're saying, no, that's not right. You know, you heard this, you heard this, you heard this. It was a mistake for you to make that finding. Then you're within your rights to do it. It's just you're going to have to follow the procedure. It has to be directed towards whatever mistake they made in interpreting the code.
But establishing a mistake regarding code interpretation, isn't that subjective?
Well, isn't all factual finding at some point or another subjective?
I think it is, but I think that...
But I understand what you're saying. But as long as you're basing it in the record and you're singling it out in the record, yes. The problem is if you just, as a matter of course, say... We don't agree. You have to actually come in and say, this is where you're made a mistake.
Okay.
And if I can answer the question that was asked by the council members, it is very common in Minnesota for the city council to be the final decider. It's really, what you have here is really still relatively unusual.
So, I looked through this once, or I looked through this idea once. If we are presented with a case that does not have minutes, then we're looking through a case, and in that case, there isn't minutes. Because we have to point to things that we believe are in error, minutes should be in. Incorporated in that case?
Findings
should be incorporated in that case?
Yes. I mean, it ordinarily would be. And so the question is, what happens if there are no findings? This was something that the courts used to have to deal with, if there aren't any findings. And the answer is, you don't have a basis in this record then to make the decision that you made.
Mayor, council members, in the case for tonight, and well, for the next one, I did include the resolution that the council adopted, or the Planning Commission adopted, that says what findings are not.
Okay.
Well, I didn't attach the minutes because I thought they'd be in the regular agenda.
Oh, that's not the case.
Gotcha. So not the case.
Okay. Other questions? Kirsten?
I'm okay with us personally keeping the format that we have. I think that we have enough power to change if need be. I think that what's laid out makes it very specific and clear as to what can be approved, and if we are thinking that there was an error, then obviously we have an avenue to overrule it. So I just wanted to put that out there for myself personally.
Right. So this one is informational. Would this be... Could we give direction to review the amending the code to include variants going back to City Council? Would that be appropriate to do that at this time, or is that a separate work session?
I think we can take that direction now, Mayor.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
Do we have consensus on that?
Do we have consensus on...
I agree.
Okay, I see four. Five. Four.
Consensus on...
On looking at putting that power back to the council.
Yep.
Okay, we have consensus on that.
Kirsten, were you a yes or no?
No.
Okay.
All right. On to item three, consider public fund expenditure to the Fire Relief Association.
Mayor, I'll kick this one off, but you know, it's a relatively simple case. If you recall, we did do a discussion a few weeks ago on request through Ramsey Police Association with the Happy Days Dunk Tank that really came from some staff organizing Happy Days and saying, hey, the city would pay for it. That was a cool thing to have. State statute said bump the brakes unless the council approves it through these channels. The request from Councilmember Busher and Peters came forward to do generally the same thing, but to the Fire Relief Association. With that, I guess I'll turn it over to Councilmember Busher and Peters to add anything else.
I just want to put on record that this was not something that was brought to our attention by city staff or anyone on the fire department. This was something that I felt was equitable, and talked to Councilmember Peters about it, and he also agreed. And that's truly about it. Like, if we've got given to our police foundation, I think we can also give to our Fire Relief Association. And it's not going to make it something that we need to do annually. I just think that's the fair thing to do.
Any comments on that? Jen?
So we already give this FRA acronym in here. This is the $22,000 that we're already giving to them. You're asking for another $400 in excess of $22,000 that we already give, correct?
So this doesn't paint the picture of what is also given to the police department annually either, right? And so that $400 we just gave to the police department's foundation was in excess to what we give them to their pensions annually also, right? And the pensions of the fire staff is significantly lower than the police staff. So it's not to be in replace of or to change any of the other things that we do annually that is practical that other cities also do. It's just an equity thing, in my opinion.
Yep.
We didn't give that money to the police department. We gave it to a
foundation
that they wanted to raise money for solely, correct? That's a separate thing that we give money to our police department, and this was a third donation place for that $400, right?
Yeah, Councilor Stewart, I'll try to back up a little bit and go bigger picture. So full-time police and fire employees, their retirement goes through para, and state law dictates how much the employee contributes and how much the employer contributes. In the case of full-time police and fire, the employer contribution is higher than, say, mine, the non-first responder full-time employee. Within the police department, and so the para contribution, that's part of the compensation to do their job.
within the police department, they formed a separate, on their own, nonprofit organization, the Ramsey Police Association. And Chief Bummel can jump in, and he knows far more about it than I do, but in the grand scheme of things, they raise funds in various ways to do different things, like some internal staff events, annual things, awards, meals, things like that. They do some gift cards to hand out to community members in need, be it, you know, 911 calls, maybe it's some gas, some temp lodging in a scary situation. And then we also have a police explorers program that the nonprofit helps send them off to an annual conference. I'm saying that slightly wrong. On the fire side, we have a handful of full-time staff. So again, the compensation includes that higher contribution to the pension. But majority of our fire department is made up of paid-on-call firefighters. So they show up to the call, they show up to training, they get called or paid for that time. Their pension is run and funded through their Fire Relief Association. So again, a separate nonprofit group. It's a 501c4, I believe, not a C3. The majority of their pension is funded through state fire aid. Simply stated, it's money that's passed through from insurance payments to the fire departments. The FRA is then responsible to establish a pension program. There's a couple different out there. I don't know exactly what ours follows, but so they get an annual contribution that's a pass-through from state fire aid, comes to the city, city passes it on to them, they invest it, and then as the department grows, they track that, and ultimately when they retire from the fire service after X number of years established by their own bylaws, they get a pension payout. As part of that requirement, they have to have a third-party annual audit, just like the city does. But in this case, for Ramsey, the city has opted to pay for that audit each year rather than having the FRA pay for it. So, you know, simply saying the city is helping already to increase their pension fund balance, thus having a larger pension when each individual member retires. In addition to the pass-through funds, the city is also contributing an extra, it's $14,000 or $15,000, somewhere in there, towards their pension fund.
Okay.
Does that kind of explain that realm?
Sorry, me too. So the police one that we did is a C3 that we gave that $400 to.
Sure, yep.
And now this fire one is not a C3, it's a C7.
It's a
whatever.
It's still a nonprofit. They have to file paperwork. And the FRA does do a little bit more than just monitor and manage their pension fund. They do some scholarship money through that, and they have different, they kind of have a general fund, and then they have their pension fund. It's very common for FRAs as they raise money in various ways to also buy some equipment to use for the fire department. Maybe it's a new tool that, you know, we've been trying to get, but their fund balance comes up and they'll opt to buy it, or maybe it's some apparel, things like that.
But the Ramsey Police one was going towards those citizens that are in need at their discretion, where this one's not benefiting the citizens in a need situation. This is benefiting back to the people that are already on staff and or equipment and all that stuff, which is great, but it's not. This was used for our people that were in need, right, at their discretion.
It's discretionary, so they can utilize it however they so choose. So it could go back to our citizens, but it could also be used, as Brian mentioned, for internal staff parties, awards, things of that nature, and it's the same for the Fire Relief Association. And we did not review the fire or the police department's pensions and say, we don't want to give them $400 because they already get a lot of money in their pension. So I feel as if this information, although important for us to comprehend, is irrelevant to this conversation. The $400 is truly just an equity thing. The Fire Relief Association does the same as the police foundation. It's just that the fire relief has to statutorily exist because of that's the way that it's set up for them to receive their pension. So I think that we've made this much more complicated than it needs to be.
All right, Dan.
Thank you. So I guess in my mind, it's not about equity, like, because that's such a slippery slope. I mean, you know, we have amazing park staff. Should we also give them 400? We have amazing, you know, well, you know, Brian, but like we have amazing, you know, Brian's amazing. All the staff's amazing. You know, where do you stop? All these 400 here and here. So to be a side
stop, there's not a nonprofit.
Kirsten will.
You know, so I'm just saying, my personally, I apologize. I'm not trying to be upset, mean, but I'm just saying, like, to me, personally, it's not about equitable, but just the fact I think it's a good idea. I think we can give them $400. Like, I'm not against that idea, but to me, it's not about, you know, once we give one person, gives them a little bit for this idea, you know, then do we have to give the other group it every time? And I don't think they have to do it every time, but I think it's a small amount, and I'd be for doing it now, but I would just do it for a different rationale, I guess.
Michael had his hand up. If anybody else is interested, call them afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't see any need to do this. It's, you know, we're not dealing with toddlers at Christmas time and trying to treat people fairly and equitably. There was a very specific thing brought to us for a very specific event, and circumstances had changed, and it was a unique situation. I don't, you know, like, in respect said, it's not a lot of money, but, you know, if you can't save a dime, you'll never save a dollar, and we're responsible for handling the taxpayers' taxes they pay, and I don't see there's any reason for this, particularly if the fire department hasn't even asked for it. I don't see it.
More comments? Kirsten?
Although they didn't request it, I obviously spoke with them and asked them if this would be something that I could raise on their behalf, and of course they were interested and excited to have the opportunity to have money donated to their arm as well. And they put a lot of effort into raising money for their relief association. They have an annual golf tournament every year around 9/11, put a lot of work into it. It's like I said, it's a very similar to what the police department does, and I don't see, it doesn't have to be like this taboo equity word that everyone's scared about, right? Like, fine, we at least we're just helping our public safety, generally speaking, and they're going to put it to good use. It's going to impact our community, whether the money is handed out to individuals within our community or not. If it's going to something good within our public safety department, then it's going to benefit us. It's tax dollars well spent.
Anyone else?
I'm going to vote for the $400, but I will never vote for it again. Same thing with the police department.
Okay. Anybody else? I think we're turning a mountain out of a molehill. I think it was a unique ask, and we answered it. It's $400 for the fire department. They're both public safety. I'm not making $400 something that small. I think worst case scenario, the fire department gets $400 that they didn't ask for. So I think going forward, we should wait until the departments ask, and then we can evaluate those. But as of now, the fire department does a great job. And if today, this one time, we proactively give them $400, it's not the worst. I would say we should let our departments ask for money in the future, though, versus us taking it upon ourselves to decide who gets what for what reason. Although it is the best intentions, and I am sympathetic towards those intentions, and it's not a bad thing that they're getting $400. It's just if we all start nominating different departments to get money, then we're all going to be fighting with each other. So I will be okay with $400 for the fire department in this one specific time. Worst case scenario, they get $400. Going forward, let's not set a precedent doing that, in my opinion. Anybody else? Consensus to... I was on the wrong case. Veterans Park already. Consensus to support providing additional $400 to the FRA. forward 5-2.
Mayor Kirsten, Spect, and Eric. Yes?
I think it was just Shanna and Chris that said no.
And you were yes. Sorry.
Right.
Okay. Shanna and Chris, no.
Yeah. All right. On to number 4, Veterans Park discussion.
Mr. Hagan, are we keeping track of consensus?
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
I mean, that starting to feel like another word.
Some, the minute taker every once in a while asks who, but I agree. I think in work session, majority consensus is fine, but...
I'm sensing
it's just not a vote. It's not an official vote, so I don't think we have to record the vote.
Keeping track of voting. That's my point.
Sensing we leave it vague.
Okay. I think it's okay to leave it vague.
All right. Are we good to move on?
Yep, we're good to move on to Veterans Park discussion. Another Busher and Peters request.
Mayor Council, this was on the future topic list, and I think at least at this point it's a little shorter of a discussion, so plan to get it done this evening, but it was shared by Councilmember Busher, seconded by Peter, to put it on the list to incorporate a veterans park, or at least consider one in Ramsey. It's been, talking to Mr. Riverblood over here, it's been kind of thrown out there at times in the past. Obviously it hasn't gone anywhere, as we don't officially have one, at least that's available to the public. And so looking to get direction ultimately, should staff start to look into this a little bit more? Does it include trying to find another organization or two to partner with? Kind of looking for council consensus on what are our next steps on this. Is this something that we spend some time on and come back with some ideas, things of that nature? I will note that there's nothing identified in our 10-year CIP. That's not saying that we wouldn't be able to find a funding source for it. It would likely come from our park dedication money. But as we know, we've got the Waterfront Park and some other parks coming on the horizon that funding source also goes towards. So,
all right, before I open it up, I usually try to go last to let the discussion play out, since this is more of a sensitive topic. As a veteran, I don't think there's a need for a park. I think if we want to have a little memorial at a park and we want to work with a third party to do a little rock or a flagpole or something like that, I think that'd be well received. I don't know what the intent is by Veterans Park, and I'm sure it's, once again, great intention. I think we could achieve this through a little memorial at the new waterfront or something of that nature that would be not a huge cost. So as a veteran, I just want to say I would not be offended if we don't launch a gigantic initiative to build a park for veterans. So that being said, we have another veteran here, and we have more people to discuss it, but I just wanted to get that out of the way, since maybe people may feel like they need to support something because it's a patriotic thing to do. I don't know. I don't care. Who would like to continue discussion? Eric or Kristen?
I'll talk. Maybe just ask a question. Didn't we have another park being planned on one of the communities nearby Brookside, right by that area?
Do you want to take over?
Sure.
But
we have a lot of proposed parks that are park land that have yet to be developed. We haven't named one as Veterans Park yet. We sure can. What Brian and I discussed on Friday or Thursday was that we also have the private sector doing something that's kind of right up the alley that we're talking about right now. That come up? Yes, it does. So John Enstrom, for a number of years, has a annual event that started out with just the flag retirement, but it's grown considerably over time and includes some gardens. I'm going to try to figure out how to make this larger here. Just
just three slides is all. But John's Place is up here in the northwest part of the city. And then as part of that, I think he's got more than 80 acres there, but he also dredged this lake. He's got it stocked with fish. And this area here, this peninsula, has a number of gardens. And he's got one garden dedicated, perennials and that sort of thing, for every branch of the service. And his event has grown to include disabled veterans, and he brings them out on pontoon boats fishing. He's had jet flyovers there. It's turned out to be a pretty big deal. And also food trucks and that sort of thing. And then he also has a monument there. So what Brian and I discussed is maybe one area to consider along this topic was just to maybe formalize or collaborate with John's event that occurs every year that honors our veterans. So private sector is already doing what we're referring to.
And I think that's a great idea. I'll get to you two in a second. If we have a future park, you want to name a veterans park.
That's what I was getting at. Do we have, like,
I just don't want to build a new park that costs a lot of money just...
How simple is to make the sign that says Alpine Park? We can have one that says Veterans Park and put a couple flagpoles up. I mean, for a park that's coming in the future, you know.
The next one, next likely one on the horizon would be up in the Trout Brook Crossing development. That's 3-ish years out, probably at the earliest. Early plans indicate some rehab of the old farm site into some public use buildings as well as playground and other open space. There's some nice trails throughout the neighborhood. That's kind of, as Mr. Blood Knight spoke, we're kind of like, what level is this? Is it the real big one? I think those are great. Or is it something council is supportive of a smaller memento inside an existing park? I think it should be somewhat compatible uses. I don't know if a next to the splash pad is probably the best spot, but, you know.
It's another good idea. It's all in the open and people see it. Sometimes if we're talking about the one at Trump we're crossing, then it's going to be buried into a neighborhood.
You can have an orb stone with the veterans plaque on the bottom.
Exactly.
That's actually
I'm not, like you, I'm not going to be offended if we don't have something. It doesn't bother me. But having something out there that we're going to have anyway, why not?
All right, Michael, Dan, Kirsten, Shanna. That's the orders of subunits.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I really like the idea of collaboration with the resident, and the only thing that I would add to that is just wondering if there's some way to perpetuate that beyond his lifetime, because once he's gone, what's going to happen with all of that? And maybe the city could work with him to sort of
succession plan. Okay. Some thoughts, Dan, then Christian, and Sharon.
Yeah, I just say I've been at several of his events. It's a really beautiful thing. Keeps up. So yeah, I just agree with what Michael's said.
Christian,
I was just going to say that Brian and I talked briefly about this and kind of agreed to what you said, that it didn't necessarily need to be a full park. I think it was just more of like a working title, but that there may be interest in putting it next to the old town hall potentially. People could rent out the town hall to utilize that as a memorial event space for a veteran family member or something of that nature. Definitely going somewhere that potentially is already an existing space, just can hold space for community to celebrate their loved ones or friends that have come from this community that have served their country.
Gina?
I was on the same as Mike's trajectory of thought. What is this man's succession plan? Is there a way that the city can come alongside if he is thinking of, because you don't do that much work and then not have an idea of how he wants it maintained. So can we, it's already genius that he's doing it. Why take away from it and put another park as it? So that's just my thoughts on it.
Okay, we can continue discussion, but would we say that we have consensus for staff to look at the cost of a little monument somewhere in the area, identify what future parks we have coming up that's already coming up that could be named veterans, and to work with the private sector on Veterans Lake to see if there's some cross uses that we could explore in the future.
Don't write
a
name,
John. No, I can't see my phone. So, possible small monument, possible rename, not renaming, but future parks being named that, and then work with Veterans Lake. I'm sorry, what was his name again? He's a great guy.
John.
John's a great guy. Continue communication.
When his event is?
I should know, but I forgot. And of course, he comes to council every year and invites the council to participate and the public to participate.
But he came and spoke to us.
Yeah, but it was on Veterans Day.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's around Flag Day.
Memorial Day. Memorial Day.
Yeah, that was a Memorial Day.
I thought it was a.
What is it?
Not summer.
He's a couple different things throughout the year.
Oh, yeah. It's Flag Day. June 14th.
Okay.
That's right.
June 12th.
Feels more right.
Cool.
So we'll try to expand relationships with him and see what else maybe could happen out there. I think Mr. Lud should try to have a little bit more, maybe he didn't say it, but we were talking, maybe a little bit more council presence at those events too, if possible. Okay.
Yep. All right. Review, we have some time. Review future topics / calendar. I'll lead us off on future topics, Mr. Hagen.
Yes. So we have the next council meeting. We partnered with the local Ramsey Foundation several months ago to, they in essence are donating a community art plan. They hired a somewhat local artist to help look at what does public art look like in parks, buildings, streetscapes, etc. That plan is to a point where we can come back and look at what it looks like and continue to incorporate it into future developments. We want the council to have some input on it, see it in its near final form. So we'll spend a good chunk of next work session on that. And then I did share with you all via one-way email that Assistant Fire Chief Kerry Shipperly has resigned, so looking forward to how does the fire department structure look moving forward. We'll have a case at the next work session for that, and I thought there was maybe one more, but I could be mistaken. Otherwise, if we think that those two topics could get done with some time to spare, we'll definitely try to grab another topic off the bottom. And then, yes.
Mayor and council members, I didn't talk to you. We had a meeting this afternoon. It was something I was going to talk to you about putting on the meeting for the next council session. And it's about secondhand good stores.
Okay. Possibly a code topic, it sounds like. Yeah. Otherwise, looking to later October, we'll have a cryptocurrency ordinance presentation, more of an FYI of what's happening, current crime, and then we'll dive into proposed rates and fees. That's usually a little bit of a longer discussion. And early November, we'll dive back into final budget. I'll also note it's not a work session per se, but October 29th, you guys will be getting a formal invite. We're going to do a Highway 10 ribbon cutting event. Held over at LaFontaine, and then also do the actual ribbon cutting out on Ramsey Boulevard in some location. But we'll invite federal, state, county, city, and other personnel that were instrumental in the last handful of years to get that project across the finish line. So starts at 2 p.m.
2?
That is it.
What day was that again?
29th.
October 29th, last Wednesday.
Where are we going to meet?
It'll all be on the invite.
Hey, well, don't tell me.
There will be some hors d'oeuvres.
Which highway?
The Ramsey Gateway Project. Should call it that, not Highway 10.
All right. Updates outside committees. Does anybody have anything they want to share about? Chris.
I'll just say the Lower Rum River Watershed Management Organization. One of the good things for Ramsey is our new engineering staff, Nathan,
right,
is now going to be kind of, well, he's in the process of being dedicated to, you know, like the water runoff, water stormwater, that kind of stuff. So I think that's going to be a good thing for the city. And you know, Ramsey remains to be the biggest permittee or whatever in WMO, so we monopolize it.
Awesome. Dan?
Brian can help correct me if I'm saying something wrong, but for the QCTV, kind of cool, they won several awards, or several of their stories. They're actually nominated for the local Emmys. Care 11 and KSTP are some of the competitors, so it's a pretty neat project they had to get nominated for that, so that's exciting. And another way to do some budget things, and yeah, otherwise, you know, it's definitely, they're bringing less in because fewer people are using cable, and, you know, that's affecting somewhat the interaction with the city and how much they might get back or need, but they're trying to obviously still get back or take as little as they need to get everything done, so.
Kirsten.
If you want to take JLEC, I'll take the fire council board.
You were at the JLEC meeting. I was.
Oh, that's right. I can take them both then.
For me.
Okay. So some of these things happen in both JLEC and in the fire council board, but the their Blaine PD has helped reconfigure the peer support team. So they're seeking members from fire and police to assist with debriefings and defusing from critical incidents. To try and help officers and first responders kind of go through those issues. And then at the Fire Protection Council, they talked about coordination with mental health providers for arson-related behavior for, like, youth fires and interventions. So that was really interesting. And then there was a lot of talk about 9/11 for the Fire Council. For both Fire Council and JLEC, they are working on PSDS systems, so like their new compliance for radios and things of that nature. And then the Fire Protection Council had a lot of trainings that were coming up, and I think so did JLEC. But yeah, there's just a lot of super cool information going on and a lot of collaboration and things that people are trying to standardize, a lot of like EMS practices. I think if people have the opportunity to come stop by a meeting one time, it'd be really cool to see how all of our cities are working together to try and save money and also protect our citizens. And there's a lot of, you know, coordinating between both of those teams. So, yeah.
And JLEC, also the meeting before that, they talked a lot about the new Anoka County facilities all around the sheriff's office that are now open. Those are available for tours. And they're just working on getting everybody radios that can hold the same encryption for large-scale events. And then Twin Cities Gateway, I went to McMinn Brothers in Ham Lake and met the team over there. It's pretty cool. One thing to note is they are using some pretty advanced technology to get a lot of information about where people are spending their money, what the average spend is for visitors outside of this city. Our biggest visitors to the Gateway Board area, the Minnesota Gateway Project, is or Twin Cities Gateway Project, is, no surprise, Duluth, Rochester are big. But summer sports are a very big draw. I think they said, like, the Sports Center area for the Youth World Cup, the Blaine, like, it was, like, in the billions of dollars or something. They had, like, 700 matches. I think 30,000 people came in. So sports is a huge draw for the local economy. So as we look forward, I think sports is very important, and areas that host tournaments make a lot of money on the hotels. So that's a big part of it, is those fees that we accepted a tax on hotel stays that's supported by the Twin Cities Gateway Project and those hotels. The more people stay at the hotels, the more revenue is generated. And then they came out with their first magazine, and Ramsey has a two-pager in there, all about Ramsey, and they're distributing those to airports, hotels, and things of that nature. So when people fly in to Minnesota now, they can take those magazines from the airport, and they can find out about Ramsey. So it is, the investment's coming back to us, and I don't think anything is out of our pocket. It's all funded through the tax.
Yeah, it's all self-funded through, you know, as the hotels rent out rooms, the tax goes to Twin City Gateway, and then in exchange we get a portion back that go towards entertainment aspects. So we, right now, it's just helping to offset Happy Day costs, but something that we can always look at in the future to change that. So.
Yep. So it's a win-win. We get free advertising, we get paid back, and put Ramsey on the map a little bit. Anybody else? Michael?
I just got a question about the JLEC. When I was on it, they were talking about the cooperatively getting the fencing.
Yeah.
Where is that? Where are you at on that?
The Emergency Fence Consortium. Yeah. They said that it's kind of on hold right now because legislatively there was, like, they weren't given the budget for it. But they're hopeful to have it re-proposed, if that's,
Is that accurate?
Mayor, I was just going to note, North Metro Mayors Association hasn't met for a while. It says September 17th, but we actually had to cancel that meeting. So they tend to take a break in the summer months, but we'll be kicking off here in the next few months again to start at both the operating committee, which is the city administrators. We're working on the budget right now. No major changes to that. Still trying to recruit new members to the association. And then this fall, we'll start talking about legislative priorities already for next spring.
All right. Anything else? If not, we will adjourn.
Let's go flying into Minnesota. I'm canceling my new plans. I'm going to Ramsey.
That's right. I will say we have to...